The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this September 17th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Lots to get to on the show today. Had a lot of fun yesterday with Uncle T-Bone recapping, giving initial results, or I guess initial reactions, rather, from Auburn and New Mexico from this past Saturday. I want to dive deeper into that a little bit today. More reactions from you. Had a lot of great phone calls yesterday, but love to get you in on the action again here today. Couple of ways you can do that here during our show. You can give us a call at 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. Our new intern Noah is standing by waiting to take your phone calls, or you can shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. Well, Tuesdays we normally have Lindsey Crosby for our baseball power hour, but he is under the weather, and so we had to call it off. I know. And it's a really big time right now, too, for baseball. So jump on Lindsey, go and DM him on social media, tell him he's being selfish. No, I'm just kidding. We hope he feels better. We hope he gets to back to normal as quick as possible, and we will definitely make up for the baseball power hour later in the week or maybe even next week, get him back in here on Tuesday. But with me in the studio, he's with me every Tuesday, it's the voice of Lee Scott Academy, the undefeated Warriors right now, Christian Griffin. My man, good to see you, brother. How are you?
It's good to be in here. I heard your little intro with everything. I still like mine from Friday, the you're on the line, but yeah. You know, I guess we'll let the person who's in charge keep on doing it. But no, it's awesome to be here. As you mentioned, Lee Scott remains undefeated. A big one this weekend as the Warriors go up to Randolph County, who's also undefeated.
Pretty, yeah, so, I've heard they're pretty good.
So back-to-back region opponents that you're trying to dismantle and get the goose egg out of that loss category. Warriors did a really nice job last week, but a big matchup on the road against Randolph County this Friday.
Yeah, looking forward to that. You and Rhett did a fantastic job this past Friday, and you and Steve and the whole crew that put together Friday for me, really appreciate you being in here. And I'm sorry for anybody that had to hear Steve Witten for on the radio, other than Witten Wednesday on WANI. I mean, there's a reason he's the GM, right? But he did a great job. You did a fantastic job, so appreciate you filling in for me on Friday. More news on that as we get through the show today. Have some more news later on about this week. But lots to get to today, my man, because you got to give your thoughts about what happened this past Saturday for Auburn. Want to dive deeper into that a little bit. You and I typically go a little deeper on Tuesdays since we have a initial reactions out of the way. Plus, since there's no baseball power hour, it does give us a chance to look around college football at what else happened this past weekend. T-Bone gave some of his reactions to that at the end of the show yesterday, but I want us to dive deeper into that as well, because, man, there's some crazy things happening in college football. Every week has been, it just seems hectic. It seems like on the forefront, there haven't been that many, quote, good games on the schedule, but as Uncle T-Bone and I talked about yesterday, I think we have to move out of the mindset, the way of thinking, the purest way of thinking where, oh, okay, Notre Dame and Northern Illinois, that's a terrible game. No way that could be any good, and it ends up being an upset right in this season of college football. Games like that, I have to do the exact same thing. I have to retrain my brain to not just skim through the games and look for the big names, because you just never know which teams are going to jump up and get people nowadays.
No, you're definitely not. First, we can give a baseball 1/20th hour and say that the Braves are one game back in the wild card, and that's all that you need to know for that one.
Yeah, they had a chance to do something this weekend.
Pretty rough. You win the first two against L.A., you drop the back two, end up splitting the series and calling it even, while the Mets won a couple of games as well to keep their spot at one game up in the final wild card spot. But going off of what you were saying, that's what I was talking about on Friday, where you look at, you know, you type in ESPN or you type in college football, and it shows all of the games, all of the scores and everything. And when you're looking at it with the broad mindset of it, even the game day, going to Williams-Brice Stadium for LSU in South Carolina, like, why is that?
Why didn't they go to Madison?
And it makes it to where, like, why? There's no big games. But then you take that lens into college football of, well, it was a must-win game for LSU. Williams-Brice hadn't hosted game day in a decade, and that place showed out. I'm sure y'all talked a little bit about that, the Zebras that might have cost a little bit of South Carolina. I'm sure that was brought up a little bit, and all the roughing the passers that we saw. Our good buddy Josh Pate had a really good take on that, saying
that
Tua being hurt on Thursday had a wild concept of officiating on Saturday.
Which
saying,
I feel like isn't talked about enough.
It's definitely not, and that's why...
That's a Josh Pate topic if I've ever heard
of one. I was about to say, that's why we're such good fans of what he does and the work that he does.
Absolutely.
Because he shoots it like it is and is more than willing to say something that is not to the popular belief. But when you dive into it, you realize it's pretty accurate. But going back to this past week of college football, what a slate it is. And it's crazy that it feels like it gets more and more hectic now that more teams are going to be in the playoff. You would think that it would have been the other way around. Now other teams, even a Georgia team that escaped, but even in Lexington, if you would have lost that game, that's fine. That's only one loss. Being Georgia, we could still probably lose another one, if not three games, and still make it. But now it feels like the stakes are just raised that much more, and I think it's because of what you said of how a Northern Illinois team can go in to South Bend and knock off Notre Dame, or it's teams that have the recency bias that we've talked about of Auburn and Cal, a perfect example of, do we believe that Auburn should lose to Cal? No, but I think there's a lot of mindset that goes into what is Cal football.
Right.
But it's changed so much over the past 3 or 4 years that you almost are having to rewire your brain and to think of the new side of college football.
With that in mind, with Auburn and Cal, that's the argument we had a week ago where – I think, and I'm so bad at this, and a lot of people are, especially in media, radio, social media, in this day and age, where multiple things can be true at one time, right, at the same time. And I think for Auburn, Cal in particular, I think both things can be true, where if you're an Auburn fan, you should always expect to beat Cal. That's how it's always been. A team like Cal, Auburn expects to beat them every time they ever step on any athletic surface because of the difference in athleticism, talent, and money between Auburn University and California, right? That can be true. But what can also be true is the fact that California can be better now because of all of the factors in college athletics, which we talk about on a daily basis. Both of those can be true. The athleticism and the level of talent and competition at a place like California or North Texas or Miami of Ohio, like those places are, and T-Bone and I had a big segment about this, so we won't go super deep in it today, but those places are better now and have the potential to be better now than they've ever been. But you can also have the expectation as a fan of, that's great, but we should still beat them.
Right. Well, I mean, think about the game that Auburn goes to October 19th against the 7th-ranked team in the country in Missouri. It feels like the history of how everything goes is, Auburn should walk into Columbia, and much like Jarrett Stidham did, I believe the last time they're up there, win 52-7 or whatever
it was. Right, because Auburn's a better program historically.
But
sure.
Then you look at it where last year Missouri went 10-3 or 11-3, beat Ohio State in a New Year's Six game. Granted, there were opt-outs and everything and that, but still, you look at it now and there's a W in the column, and that's all that matters, and now you're sitting there after a really nice win over Boston College and the 7th-ranked team in the country.
Yeah, you look at what happened this past weekend. You mentioned Georgia going on the road to Kentucky, and shout out to that Kentucky team because I wrote them off after South Carolina. Most people did because they looked terrible against the Gamecocks. But now that we look at it, I think that said more about South Carolina than it did Kentucky, because that Kentucky team had every chance in the world to beat Georgia. And if Stoops wasn't conservative and actually went for it for a fourth down at midfield rather than punting the ball back to Georgia with, what, 2 minutes on the clock or something like that?
2:33 or something like that.
You were down by a point.
Yeah.
And he said,
and essentially had four timeouts too.
Yeah, and he was like, "Oh, we're good. Well, our defense has played great. Let's you had the number one team at your house on the ropes, and you gave up, you gave in, you waved the white flag." And Stoops said, "Yeah, we'll give Carson Beck the football back," and they lost.
Yeah, we can get one more stop.
Well, you didn't.
And first off, applaud, hand clap to Hank Brown for the statistic that came out that said that Brock Vandergriff is now the 17th. He's 17th in the SEC in passing yards, and there's 16 SEC teams because Hank Brown has thrown for him more than he has in three games. So Vandergriff is now 17th out of 16 teams in the conference in passing yards. But a game like this, I think, is – it's something that Georgia goes through every single year, it feels like, whether it's Kentucky or whether it's Missouri. Yeah. You feel like it's one of those games where, what was it, 16-6 or something last year, Georgia beat Kentucky in just a gross game, very, very similar to one that we saw last Saturday night. And then you see what Georgia continues on with the rest of the year. Kirby Smart has always done a fantastic job of providing that mindset, even last year, of, the media is projecting us to go 7-5, and we're sitting there talking about it. Who in the world predicts Georgia to go 7-5? Well, now he's going to be able to use this game for Georgia. And I also saw something in a tweet, and I couldn't agree with it more, and it said that game right there was the best thing that could have ever happened to Georgia and the worst thing ever that could have happened to college football. And I don't know that I disagree.
But it's the Saban factor, the Saban effect of, okay, guys, you walk in and you're like, well, you thought you were invincible, and you just about got.
Yeah.
I mean, you almost let Kentucky beat you. Like, let's use that a little bit. And Kirby Smart, being from the Saban tree, will use that to Georgia's advantage, and they will get better because of it. That's what great coaches do. That's what winning teams do. They will get better from something like this.
Kentucky had 22 more yards of offense than Georgia did, 284 to 262. Kentucky only passed for 114 yards, but ran for 170 and put 12 points on the board.
I think that Georgia team is really good, but they're not invincible. I think it's what we've learned, and I don't know a team that is. I don't know. I mean, remember Ohio State, who was off this past weekend, but you look at their past games, right? They have not had good starts in some of their games, have the Buckeyes. I think the only team right now that has truly looked just untouchable, maybe two or three teams. I keep growing as I scroll down the list, but I can think of
two right now, and I bet they're on the same list.
I think I have three right now that through just 3 weeks of the season look untouchable. I'm not saying they are. I'm not saying they will be, but I think through their first three games, I think you could say this about Texas.
Yes.
I think you could say it about Ole Miss.
Yep.
And I think you could say it about Tennessee.
Yep. Texas was the one that I mentally left off, but yeah, those three I would agree with 100%.
I mean, those three teams, even in this era where more teams are better now, right? More teams are good at college football. Texas has handled business. Ole Miss handled business. Nobody talked about them going to Wake Forest Saturday night and taking care of business 40-6.
And what a topic of conversation that is now with everything coming up. Have you seen now that Wake paid Ole Miss $1 million to not play their side of the home game? Did you see that?
No.
Yeah, so since Ole Miss came into their place, Wake Forest bought out Ole Miss's game next year, so that way Wake Forest did not have to travel to Oxford.
I did not see that.
Kiffin, as he does, just laid it on to
him. Wow.
He said it was complained, saying that it's one of those unwritten rules that you just don't break. And
they literally bought themselves out of a loss.
Yeah. Which is,
they're gonna play some Western Missouri Valley State Community College of Technology. They're gonna get a win. They bought a win. That is wild to me. I did not see that.
Yeah, but it's crazy. But I would agree. Those three teams, there's not too many teams in the country. There might only be one, and it's the University of Texas, where your backup quarterback comes into the game and you arguably feel More confident?
Yeah, which is so crazy. And for Texas, what's the status on Quinn Ewers?
They
have a timeline on him yet?
They said it's oblique.
I saw the ribs. Yeah.
And they said that I believe they don't play anybody this week either.
I got their schedule right here. They play they play UL Monroe.
Right.
And then they play Mississippi State.
So I believe that was the timeline that he was supposed to come back for the beginning of SEC play. But Louisiana Monroe, I mean, Arch Manning should be able to throw for 300 and then get him off the field and run the ball with your fifth string running back.
Same thing with against Mississippi State, who let Toledo.
The Blue Rockets, baby.
Yeah, hey, shout out Ohio, man. They came in and just destroyed Mississippi State in Stark Vegas. Again, there you go. There is a prime example of how smaller teams are getting closer to bigger teams.
And I would love for the topic of conversation to come back up, not even necessarily here, but in the college football world, where going back to the beginning of this season, Kirby had a rant about how he feels like, Georgia can't, I don't remember exactly what it was, but along the lines of Georgia can't be dominant anymore. There's less people ever that are playing college football. And it was the fact of, or is it just the fact that your roster isn't eight deep anymore? Mm-hmm. And you saw, I think their defensive line is very vulnerable. They're very good, but I think their defensive line played like 60 something snaps. And or like three or four of them did, and the others played like 20.
And their offensive line is not all that great.
No, and so if you had a team,
offensive lines have passed.
Right. So if you had a team that could run the ball down the field or have a time of possession game against Georgia, you'd really feel like they could be vulnerable to the run. Again, you gave up 170 yards to Kentucky when you were forcing them to throw the ball. You were putting 7-8 in the box, and they still ran for a $170 on you. Is it really because there's less people playing college football, or is it because they're starting to see the true fact that you're not going to dominate every single game on a 13-game schedule?
I've been on record on this show as saying there will never, ever be an era, a dominated era of college football like we saw with Nick Saban Alabama.
No.
Because of everything that's happened, because of everything we just talked about, that will never happen.
No.
You will have more of these mini dynasties, Georgia, Clemson, Ohio State, whoever the case may be. Others can get there. More mini dynasties, but that longevity of a 15-year period, no, it ain't happening anymore. Let's get to a break here as we are just underway in hour number one on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. We're recapping more from college football over the weekend. Would love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Back after this here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
We continue on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. I'm Jacob Goins, Christian Griffin with me in the studio, looking around college football, diving a little deeper into what happened in week three of the season. Coming up after our bottom of the hour break, we'll talk more in terms of Auburn, get some of Christian's thoughts on what happened with Auburn this Saturday, taking down New Mexico. Phone lines are open all show long today, like a Friday, but it's Tuesday. 334-321-1390. You can also shoot us a text, 334-784-1067.
Tree for All Tuesday.
Tree for All Tuesday. That doesn't really...
It doesn't, same concept.
Talking Tuesday doesn't really work.
No.
We talk every day. I don't know. All right. Intern Noah, you're on it, man. We need a new when we have to call an audible and can't do baseball power hour, we got to find something else to call Tuesdays. But we were talking about teams so far, and it's a very limited serving size or sample size, I guess, on teams that seem untouchable right now, that have just taken and done what they've needed to do in the first 3 weeks of the season. And I think it's important here to look at the teams that we named. And I want to add one more that may get a little flack, but I think Miami could be put into that category as well. And what all four of these teams have in common, Texas, Tennessee, Miami, and Ole Miss, what all four of them have done in 3 weeks of this season, they've all at least tried to give themselves a test, right? You have Texas, who went up to Michigan at the Big House and beat them. I know Michigan's not a good team, but they beat them, right? Tennessee took down NC State, dominated NC State, quote-unquote neutral site. It was in the state of North Carolina, okay? Ole Miss went to Wake Forest this weekend. No, Wake Forest isn't anything crazy, but it is a Power 4 road game. Miami dismantled Florida in the season opener. I know Florida's not good, but they at least tried. You see what I'm saying here? They've put themselves through at least a game so far. Most of these teams will get another test this weekend or next weekend, and then we're really going to find out if there truly are any untouchables this season.
Well, that, and you could even eliminate the conversation of the topic of who have they played, or, you know, they haven't played anybody yet, because it's...
Yeah, that's what I was debunking.
In this world right now, is even if you haven't necessarily played anybody, you're at least going out and handling business, which a bunch of teams can't say that they've done. You looked at Oregon, who was arguably, I think they were picked second. They were the most popular pick to go to the national championship and lose, but still make it to the national championship. And you saw what they did against Idaho. I think Boise State's a better team than people realize in that group of five, but it took a walk-off field goal for them to do it. And it took, they came alive, but it still took two quarters or two and a half quarters against Oregon State to finally look good. So it brings up, as you were mentioning, of, you know, they're taking care of business against the teams that they need to do, mm-hmm. or they need to take care of business of, and then they're at least giving themselves games that you would hope and you would think usually would be games, like the one in Gainesville, to give them that early season test. And going off of what you also said, where you could almost give more credit to those teams than discrediting the teams that lost, yep. where it almost makes it to where, man, Ole Miss might just be that good, or Texas might just be that good. Michigan might not be as bad as we think. It might just be a Texas thing, like a Clemson, Georgia. Clemson might not be as bad as we think. It's just that Georgia's really good.
Yeah, exactly. And so you look at that and some other results from what happened this past week. And any other results or storylines, Christian, that you wanted to highlight before we get to our bottom of the hour break and move on? I mean, Wade and I talked about yesterday a little bit. The fact that the state of Florida is outside of Miami is horrific. Florida State, yeah. Florida, and just a downward spiral. Florida State 0-3. They're in Florida, in Gainesville, they're chanting to fire Billy, so that's probably going to happen. I mean, just so many things to get to. Any other ones that you wanted to highlight?
Ooh. Well, just going off of those two that you'd mentioned, the Florida State was 9.5 wins projected, and so imagine taking
they're
the
eliminated.
Under. Imagine taking the under.
You just won.
You won 3 weeks into the season.
God, that's the best hit
that
of all time.
Absolutely,
that's amazing.
And then the Florida Texas A&M game, I had a bunch of buddies, three or four of them. That was their bachelor trip, was to go down to Gainesville because one of them was a Florida graduate. But they did it knowing what was going to happen, and we're going almost for the comedic relief.
Sure.
But they were sending me videos all throughout the afternoon of the entire stadium chanting, "Fire Billy." And it wasn't something that it was like, man, is that what they were saying? I can't quite tell what they're
this
chanting.
This wasn't a Let's Go Brandon type of thing.
No, it was a, yeah. Oh my gosh. Like, wow. The entire stadium was on it. Another one to look at real fast, the Oklahoma Tulane game. It drew a couple of question marks. It was 34-19. But Oklahoma had to pull away late. Tulane, I think, is another really under the radar team. I think they were a little bit better than they were, or a little better last year than they are this year. But Oklahoma is another one of those teams where the record says 3-0, but it hasn't necessarily been a cakewalk for those teams. And I mean, they're welcoming Tennessee this week, which is going to be arguably the game of the week, prime time. What a game in Norman that one's going to be.
Where's College Game Day at this week? Have they announced it?
I was about to say confidently
surely
that it has to
Norman.
Be this one.
I would think so. But, I mean, based off of what they did last week, I don't know. I don't know where they're going to be. Them, if they're not, SEC
yes,
Nation will be
it's
there.
It's Norman.
SEC Nation still might be there. They're either there or they're in Auburn this weekend for Arkansas. I don't know. Because I think on the SEC slate, not to get too ahead of ourselves for this weekend, but I think Auburn-Arkansas is probably the second best game in the SEC for this upcoming weekend slate. I think.
Yeah, I know. I would agree with you. That's why, I mean, there's a bunch of, I think, like Barstool or certain people are coming down here for that game. And then the only other game I can think about that really, you know, stands out on the radar is, I mean, I'm sure y'all talked about Alabama, Wisconsin, of how that was kind of, for some reason, what we all expected, but the national media didn't expect for some reason. Then Tyler Van Dyke's injury sure didn't help. And the only other one is, LSU-South Carolina, where you learned a little bit about LSU and their ability to actually finish a game, unlike against the other USC. But the biggest thing is just how big officials played a factor in that game and all throughout the games this entire weekend.
I've seen most people say college football refereeing has been the worst we've ever seen through 3 weeks, and I tend to agree with what we've seen so far. We'll flip the page and look towards Auburn coming up as they took down New Mexico. Get some of Christian's thoughts, dive a little bit deeper into that as well. We'll have that coming up for you next 30 minutes into hour number one.
Are on the line with Jacob Goertz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Let's get to the phone lines, 334-321-1390. Shane, you're on the line, man. Appreciate you holding on through the break. What's up?
Yeah. Hey, guys. How are y'all doing?
Doing good, man. What's up?
Man, I'm going to be honest with you. I was calling and then put me on hold, and I zoned out. And I don't even know why I called. You know, what was the last thing you guys were talking about?
We were just kind of driving into the different college football results from week two. We're talking Florida State.
Okay, I just had a random fact that I noticed.
Sure.
Have you noticed a trend when Alabama has a big game, they take out the quarterback, and then the rest of the game is easy peasy. I mean, I can tell you three times at least when that happened. Is that just a coincidence?
I mean, and I'll say this about the Van Dyke play with Wisconsin. I don't think the tackle caused the injury. I think he was pulling up as the tackle happened. Yes, there were obviously a lot of, don't want to say
it's
jokes,
not,
but I guess references.
No one did that on purpose.
Right.
No,
it's just how,
all,
yes, it is. It is funny to see.
Coincidence.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. I agree.
I think a couple of national championships were won that way. I know Texas was.
Texas was for sure. Hey, no doubt about that one.
Good. You caught me off that break.
No worries, man. No worries.
I love the show, guys.
Yeah, appreciate the call, man. Always good to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Yeah, I mean, I saw people, you know, people were talking about it. A lot of Auburn people were like, great. Of course, right? Here we go again. Alabama's got a big game. There's the break, right? There's the help that they were looking for. But let's be real for a second. And Shane, I know you weren't insinuating this, but Alabama was going to win that game regardless.
Yeah.
They were going to win that game whether Van Dyke was in there or not. Like, would it have helped? Yeah. Did they look great doing it? Maybe not so much, but Alabama was still going to win that game.
I'll give them a 42-17. We'll give them a touchdown.
Yeah, give them an extra touchdown.
But, yeah, I mean, it's – not that, again, we were making jokes about it, but it is very much just a coincidence. Alabama's obviously a very physical team, but I agree with you. I don't think the Van Dyke injury on the sideline. I think he was pulling up beforehand, and the tackle and fall obviously didn't help when another grown man is landing on you. Was it Colt McCoy? Was that the Texas quarterback that was injured in the national championship?
National championship game, man.
All the way back then. I mean, you were only 20 back then. So.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Well, Shane, appreciate the call. Let's flip over to the Auburn game from Saturday. Christian, I know you have some thoughts. Uncle T-Bone and I gave some of our thoughts yesterday. I have some more now that we've heard of Hugh Freeze from Tiger Talk last night. Of course, the press conference yesterday. And speaking of Tiger Talk, just in case you missed it on Wings 94.3, we air that every Monday live, whether they're in studio at Baum Howard. You can catch that 6 to 7 every single Monday over on our sister station, Wings 94.3. But in case you miss it and you do want to hear it again, We are re-airing that here on ESPN 106.7 on Thursdays from 6 to 7. So if you want to catch that during football season, you can always stay tuned in right after the drive on Thursdays, 6 to 7. We'll re-air Tiger Talk here on the Auburn Open like a sports leader. But Christian, I'm going to open it up to you, my friend. Auburn takes down New Mexico on Saturday. Hank Brown got the start. Looked pretty good. Defense did their job on the scoreboard. A lot of things there to get into. I know a lot of people fired up on that, but go ahead. I'm going to leave it open to you, my friend. Auburn takes down New Mexico.
I think the very first thing that we preface while going into this is essentially how we preface the beginning of the show, of where we can no longer say, yeah, that this is who they played. And so I'm not going to mention Hank Brown looked good, but it was only New Mexico's defense. I'm not going to preface that. I'm going to start off by just saying he looked very comfortable in his role. He made the right reads, which Hugh Freeze followed up on Monday, was he said that he made 100% of his checks about whether or not they should run or they should throw. He was late on a couple reads, and yes, it did help him out a little bit, but from the standpoint of making the right throws, making the right reads, I think he did everything that was asked of him. I think that everything's going to be opened up more this week. He's going to have a full week of knowing I am the guy this week. It's not going to be Hank, you're going to get your fair share of reps, but it might not be till Thursday or Friday where you give your mind enough time to process everything. You're going to have a full week, and it helps so much that he now has that week before SEC play of live action going up into this is where you went wrong. This is the things that you could have done better. This is what you did right. And you're actually watching yourself rather than watching practice film and trying to mentally put yourself into a quarterback's mind. It is you standing behind the offensive line in an actual game, and that's going to allow everything to be so much slower this week than it possibly would have if he's making his very first start on Saturday.
Which is what a lot of people were saying last week was, if you're going to start him, do it now. Against New Mexico, to where, yeah, he can do things right and he can mess up a few times. It hopefully doesn't impact the result, and then Auburn can get those changed before SEC play starts.
Right. It's also a crazy stat that I saw, that it was the first time in his career at Auburn that Jarquez Hunter had carried the ball 20 times. Which
that's
is
so wrong.
It's
the stat is not wrong. It's just wrong that it's the first time that's
right.
happened.
Like, and
that,
granted,
be that way.
A majority of the time, it does feel like it's a good thing because there's two or three backs that you can go to where, you know, if Jarquez gets 15, Damari gets 8, Jeremiah gets 3, you're still running the ball, you know, 27 times a game, and that's not including the Peyton Thorne keepers. But with your go-to preseason all-SEC back, feed him. Give him the ball.
Run the ball.
Which is what I think they took a lot of focus on. I know Hugh Freeze says that he always loves to be balanced, but when you have a guy like that who's breaking off 7-8 yards a pop, give him the ball.
it's pretty simple. I mean, there's people that know the saying, right? Run the ball, right? Give him the ball.
Darn.
But, yeah, darn. Keep
darn
it clean.
Ball.
Yeah, keep it clean on radio. And, you know, Hugh Freeze yesterday, Tiger Talk and during his weekly press conference, he kind of came to played a little defense, to where he was asked about the running game and whether that was the focus or whether, you know, that type of question.
Right.
And he said most of it, you know, is RPO, and we leave it up to the quarterback. And like he said, I don't have a set number of run plays that we want to call each and every game, but it's like, I get that. I do. I get that. And I'm glad that you have the RPO, and I'm glad that you have a quarterback in Hank Brown that appears to be able to make the right decision. He said Hank ran it every time it was supposed, or made it a run play every time it was supposed to be a run play.
Yeah.
But here's what I say. Okay, well then, let's change it up just a little bit. If he is averaging, Jarquez Hunter, that is, yeah, 6 or 7 yards every time he touches the football, like, it's okay to call a run play. It's okay to give him the football more than just whenever the defense is showing that they can't stop it.
Right, rather than when you're looking at it, because RPO system works. If there's 6 or less in the box, you like your chances running the football. Now, if they bring 7 or 8 down, you obviously like the pass, but if you're liking the momentum, you have the defense on your heels, and say they bring that 7th guy into the box, but you feel like you have the numbers, you have the physical advantage, yeah, I'm with you. Like, who really cares if you want to call a design run that is going to be a run? Like, just did you see Peyton Manning's talk about RPO last night in the Falcons Eagles game?
No, I didn't.
It was pretty funny.
I wasn't watching the Manning cast. I haven't been a fan of it this year.
I haven't necessarily been either, but my ESPN app wasn't working correctly, so I had to go to it. But I thought it was actually not bad. And granted, Peyton Manning might be the least running quarterback that college football or professional football has ever seen. But he was talking about how even on the offensive side of the football, he likes the R. And he likes the P, but he doesn't really love the O. He likes to be able to know what's going to happen. And they were talking about it with Saquon Barkley. Now the Eagles running back with Jalen Hurts in the backfield, they run that RPO system. But every once in a while, you could see Saquon have to hesitate every single time he got the ball just because there was the O. There was the option of whether or not he was going to pass or whether or not he was going to run.
Yeah.
And as a running back, you'd think the mentality of, I don't want it to be an option. Give me the football. Let me know that I'm getting the football. Let me pick out my spot and let me go.
Right.
Let me run the ball.
Yeah, I mean, that's not where you want to be, I guess, as a running back in their eyes of, yeah, I have to be, I'm questioning what's going to happen up to the millisecond of it happening or not. I'll tell you what the Eagles aren't going to do is throw it to Barkley anymore because, God, I mean, I'm not even an Eagles fan. But I did have the Eagles defense last night. Guess who was down by 7 points in fantasy this week and needed the Eagles defense to stop Kirk Cousins? This guy. Mm. You know what they didn't do? Stop the Falcons' offense.
You like that?
Yeah. God.
Kirk.
God. Kirk
Prime
Cousins.
Prime time, Kirk.
He's 50 years old, and the Eagles' defense let him pick him apart and drive down the field and score because Saquon Barkley can't catch the ball, which I wasn't going to win at that point anyway. I needed a defensive play. It didn't happen, but it's fine. You know, I'm not mad about
it
at all. I'm not salty at all.
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
No, I'm upset. I'm very upset. But no, with the RPO thing and with what Hugh Freeze was saying, like, again, I get it. I get that you are running a specific type of play depending on what the defense shows you. Yes. But there are also certain times, and if it's a case-by-case basis.
It is.
And it very well could be that way this weekend against Arkansas, where if they can't stop Jarquez Hunter, if they can't stop Damari Alston, run it at them until they do. And then when they pack the box, throw it over them. Throw it through them. Throw it around them. Hank Brown proved, I think, that he can make the throws. And I want you to get some more of your thoughts on this, because that's what I said yesterday was, I think Hank Brown made 3 or 4 throws on Saturday that I don't think Peyton Thorne makes. I think Hank Brown had a few completions against New Mexico that if it's the same play, run the same way, everybody plays it out the exact same way, but you've put Peyton Thorne back in there, I don't think he makes the completion.
It even goes back to the very first touchdown throw with Camden Brown on the RPO slant where the safety was over the top. Camden Brown was one-on-one on the corner, so you had about a 3 or 4 yard radius of timing, not even where the ball could be, but of timing, and it had to be on the numbers, and Camden Brown essentially boxed out the cornerback, and Hank Brown hit him in the number 4. And it was exactly what you love to see, because you can't miss on a spot like that. You can't miss on a throw like that. That was the first throw, the Keandre Lambert-Smith over-the-shoulder fade. I guess not a fade, but the go route on the sideline. That's the other throw that really, really stands out to me. And again, timing will get there with Hank. Again, that was the very first time he's seen live action. Everything is going to slow down now that he's had that week. But the placement of the football, I think, on the short throws were also something that I was really, really happy with. The Rivaldo Fairweather touchdown, where Rivaldo went out and stopped. He threw it on the inside shoulder, almost leading Rivaldo back there. He broke a tackle.
Beautiful.
And he scored.
Yep.
It's one of those things to where you can have that completion, and Rivaldo more likely than not, catches the football if it's placed on the outside shoulder. But you're, as a quarterback or as a receiver, you're expecting your quarterback to put it in a spot to almost benefit you rather than catching it, getting hit. It's a pickup of 3. It's now 3rd down and 4. Yeah, put it on my inside shoulder, almost get my momentum working back towards the middle of the field. I break a tackle, and I'm in the end zone for 6.
And in that situation, too, it's more than just as a quarterback, it's get it to the receiver, let him catch it. You want to put, like you were saying, put him in a spot to not just catch the football, but get yards after the catch.
And for somebody in week 1 to already be established at. You'd think somebody in week one, very first time at the job, very first week, all just of a sudden get the snaps. It's one of those, because I'm sure that's honestly, that's probably the mindset this week of we're going to get guys open. We're going to get you some confident building throws. Just get it out of your hands. And I saw something that said that he held the ball for an average of 2 seconds in the pocket, which is fantastic.
I wonder what the average was for Peyton. I know a lot more reps, obviously. But.
Right, but just the fact of getting the ball in and getting the ball out, and it wasn't just dink and dunk 3-yard completions. You were picking up some pretty solid gains. And so for somebody in week one, your very first week of true action, for it to not be, I have to just throw it to him. I have to just throw it to him.
Get it out, get it out, get it out.
Right, it is the ability to, this is a slant to Camden Brown. If I don't like the run, I'm putting it on his face mask or I'm putting it on his numbers. And he's going to go make a grab. And he did.
I think you can make an argument, as we're about to get to break, you can make an argument that's the difference in a good quarterback and what could be a great quarterback.
100%.
Good quarterbacks get it to him, sure. But the great quarterbacks throw it to where their receiver makes the play, but can then make a play after they catch the football, running down the field, hitting them in stride, rather than, okay, yeah, I got it to him, but he had to stop. He had to slow up. He had to turn around and fight for the football with the safety because he came over because it was 5 yards underthrown. Like, that's the difference here. And we don't fully know that with Hank Brown against higher level competition, but I feel that he made those types of throws more times than not against New Mexico, which that's all you can ask for. And the jury's still out on him in terms of better competition, but in the one game that he started, I believe he completed that job.
Coach Freeze said that he's always had that it factor. He just hasn't known to what level. I believe that was said in the press conference, but he slowly began to figure out that, hey, this guy has his wits about him, he has his head on, and no moment is too big. By no means am I saying he is Tom Brady, and I know that we have to get to break, but I loved hearing Tom Brady talk about the throws that he had to make because he knows that Ray Lewis is in the middle of the field. He knows that certain players, he can't throw the ball at certain spots because it's a hospital ball if he does. And so for somebody in week one to almost have at least that sort of mindset of let me feed it to the inside shoulder or let me throw it to the outside, knowing that he might get hit, but I'm putting it in the best spot for myself to get a completion, for him to hang on to the ball, and for him to be able to get up after the hit, I feel like is all you can ask for in week one.
We'll take our last break here in hour number one, come back, wrap it up, and get into hour number two. Phone lines are open all show long today, 334-321-1390. We'll wrap up hour number one after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
All right, we're wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Again, getting into hour number two in just a few minutes, we will keep talking Auburn football, talking college football, anything else that happens to come up. But I got a text in the on the line text box. That number is 334-784-1067. This guy says to us, and in response, right, to what we were talking about earlier with Bama, let me rephrase that. Alabama did not knock out Van Dyke for Wisconsin. Van Dyke got hurt against Alabama. I think it's a fair way to say that. I think it's true. I'm not going to insinuate that Alabama ever has knocked out a quarterback, okay? Am I going to say that no team has ever injured somebody on purpose? No, because that probably has happened at some point in time. But we were talking about how Alabama was going to beat Wisconsin regardless of Van Dyke being in there, but we referenced the national championship game way back when against Texas when it was McCoy that got hurt and Alabama's curb stomped him for the entire game. This text message says, if we're comfortable enough to say that Texas wins the national championship if McCoy doesn't get hurt, then we should be comfortable enough to say that Alabama would have won the national championship had Mechie and Williams not gotten hurt against Georgia. I'll respond to this by saying, I'm not saying that Texas was going to get hurt or that Texas was going to win the national championship and beat Alabama if McCoy doesn't get hurt. They would have had a hell of a much better chance if he was there, right? I think it's the best way to say that. They had a much better chance of beating Alabama if McCoy is in this game. But I'm also...
You're saying that Garrett Gilbert doesn't go 15 of 40? Are you saying that Colt McCoy wouldn't go 15 of 40 and throw 4 interceptions?
Yeah, I don't think he would have. I don't think so. But I'm also comfortable in saying that in Alabama-Georgia, if Metchie and Williams don't get hurt, yeah, they probably do win the national championship.
I'm from north of Atlanta, about 45 minutes. So anytime that I can discredit Georgia, I'll happily give it to Alabama. So I agree with that 100%. That, yeah, sure, that's a very fair statement. I'll agree with both of those that, yeah, that if those receivers don't get hurt, Alabama wins, sure.
Probably. I'm with you.
I'll shake your hand with that.
Sure, absolutely. And again, with Van Dyke, I don't think Alabama hurt him. It wasn't a nasty play. It wasn't a nasty hit. He was running out of bounds, and he got tackled from behind, and he pulled up. And I just don't think it was going to happen. I don't think they were going to win regardless. I mean, Alabama, now the 16-point spread, yeah, could have been up in the air a little bit more. But I still think they win the game.
I do too.
Like, it is what it is. So, coming up in hour number two, we'll talk Auburn. We'll talk college football. Maybe other storylines around the sport as well. If we need to, we can dive into a little bit of baseball. I know you mentioned that at the beginning, Braves. I mean, just depressing. I mean, really.
It is, and it's kind of been an all season long. As soon as you feel like, oh, we beat the Dodgers in the first two games when we expected to get swept, all of a sudden we win one more, we're guaranteed to jump a spot. Then all of a sudden you drop the next two, the Mets continue to win. And rather than going up a game or being tied, you're now down one in a big three-game series in Cincinnati before you play the Mets down the line.
Mm. All right, hour number one is in the book. Stick around. Hour number two coming up. We'll get to the phone lines when we come back to start hour number two. You can be a part of that as well. 334-321-1390. Hour number two coming up.
Is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two on ESPN 106.7. If you missed any of hour number one, you can go and listen to the podcast. We post the show as a podcast each and every day after the show on our station website at ESPN 106.7. So be sure you go and do that. Talked a lot of college football in hour number one. No baseball power hour today. Lindsey Crosby unable to join us. And so we talked a lot of football. We'll do that again here in hour number two. We're going to get to the phone lines as well. You can call in today, 334-321-1390, or you can shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box. That number is 334-784-1067. Before we get into content, get into the phone lines as well. I want to remind you that hour number two, each and every day here on ESPN during On the Line, is brought to you by the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them bringing you the second hour of our show each and every day between 3 and 4 o'clock. 334-321-1390. Let's get to the phone lines. Bradley, appreciate you holding on through the break, my man. You're on the line.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Want to get y'all, pick y'all's brains just from an old man point of view.
Sure.
Correct me if I'm wrong of driving, but I believe Hank's stat line was like 17 for 25, and obviously I went to Auburn, so forgive me if my math wrong, but that comes to a 68%, and I'm an old Moneyball guy. I believe I saw what I perceived as a couple passes that should have been caught maybe at the end, which would have taken him to, you know, dadgum 76% completion rate. And obviously there's always a ball or two maybe that shouldn't have been caught that was as well. And I just noticed in watching the game a couple of the balls that were dropped that I thought should have been caught, there was no body language change out of our current quarterback. And for me, that just means the lock, you know, hey, they're gonna make some, they're gonna drop some, no problem, go to the next play, short memory. And yet I believe it was Thompson that caught a pass that was uncatchable that he caught. So just what do you, earlier in the year you guys said, hey, we needed a B+ performance to maybe hit the goals 8-4 or 9-3 this year. What do you see percentage wise or the attitude of not seeing the guys when they go watch film and see no attitude change or hey, he's not blaming me? How does that play out over the course of the year in moving forward, and what would you like to see continue to be a successful year now if we have a new quarterback?
I think those are really good points, and I like how you said, you know, there's a couple of balls that, yeah, probably should have been caught. I mean, Perry hit one right in the hands, and he dropped it. There's a couple of others that I'm thinking of. But you do also have to recognize that, yeah, there will be a couple of plays where receivers just make a really good play that most times would not have been caught. And so all of that being said, 17 of 25 in your first start, 4 touchdowns. My big thing, Bradley, no interceptions for Hank Brown, I think is a really big part of this too. And so in terms of what Auburn needs at the quarterback spot now, I think that type of a performance is good for me. I think Hugh Freeze saying that Hank made all the right reads in terms of when it should be a run, he was 100% on that. Only had 3 plays that he wanted to really digest in and pick apart, and said that Hank didn't make a bad decision. Bradley just made, or there was a better decision to be made. And so for Auburn to hit whatever goals that it has this year, and I think we could revisit that conversation since the Cal loss happened, I think Auburn still needs a B+ performance. But I think with Hank Brown, that has people excited, there maybe has potential for a better graded performance than what we were getting from Peyton Thorne.
Okay. I just was curious, you know, if that leads into, you know, when I see frustration over a drop pass, and then I'm like, okay, you're losing the team. You know, that's what we love about college football is emotion can take you and beat teams on any given Saturday that you're not supposed to beat, unlike sure. the NFL. So I was just curious if that changes, you know, hey, the guys go start making the plays that they shouldn't because there's no frustration when you do make a mistake. And that's what I saw is I just saw maybe a – you know, a change in attitude, emotion. Did anybody else notice that?
Yeah,
that
I think Hank just had a lot of confidence. I mean, he had a lot of poise, had a lot of swag. And I think when you don't have a lot of plays that went wrong, it's easy to act that way. And again, a lot of that plays into the opponent and how does that look moving forward against Oklahoma or Georgia or whoever. What does Hank Brown look like in true adversity? I think time will tell on that.
Cool. I can't wait to watch. So thank you guys.
Yep. Appreciate the call, my man. 334-321-1390.
I think another big factor that you look at everything, and from the receiver side of things, you didn't see any frustration really in week one because everybody was getting the ball. In week two, there was a little bit of wide receiver frustration because it got to the point of where you couldn't even give those guys a chance to not only get the ball, but to go up and make a play. And so you're hoping that with Hank Brown now at the quarterback spot, guys are going to get those 50-50 chances to go up and make a play. You're going to be guaranteed that the ball will get to you. And I think that eliminates a lot of frustration because it eliminates any sort of conversation of just get me the ball or throw it in my direction. Use me on the offensive side of the football. And so when you continue to have Hank Brown, somebody in there that is a gifted passer, kind of eliminates a little bit of the RPO running system that I think Peyton Thorne brought to the offense. That being said, I think you have to have a dynamic thrower in this league if you're going to be successful. And I think with week one, again, 17 of 25, you could probably throw that line right at it again with if you threw every pass that was supposed to be caught was caught and every pass that wasn't supposed to be caught wasn't caught. Again, the Perry Thompson throw, a little bit underthrown, a little bit behind Perry, but he made a really nice job adjusting to the ball. You give him that incompletion, and then he completes the screen. I would say that number is pretty spot on.
And from a frustration side of things, we see so many quarterbacks, heck, so many players who let their careers in college, professional, high school, whatever the case may be. We see that on Friday nights all the time, where there are guys who let their careers be halted because they can't control their emotions. They can't get out of their own head, especially at the quarterback spot. And that's what you're looking for. And is it fair to say that Peyton Thorne had that at times? I mean, you didn't visibly see it all the time with just slamming a helmet or cussing somebody out or whatever, but I think there was a lot of, and I'm not the first one to talk about this, but a lot of indecisiveness. Yeah. I think Tebow may have said this yesterday, where just at times you saw him questioning what he wanted to do and questioning whether that was the right decision. And that's a perk of a young gunslinger like Hank Brown, who hasn't played a whole lot of football, is, hey, he's going to come in and throw it. I mean, he told you that in the postgame interview with Taylor Davis on ESPN. He said, look, I'm going to do what I do. Like, I have trust in myself, trust in the Lord, and I'm going to come in and do my thing. And I think that's what you're going to see. Could that be bad? Absolutely. But it could also be really good.
It's one of those ignorance is bliss type situations. Yeah. It's like playing a golf course for the very first time. You walk onto the fourth tee box, and you see it's a little bit of a dog leg, so you hit your little fade or your draw. Since I'm a lefty, it would be the fade. But I go up there, oh, I didn't know there was a pond right there. Oh, otherwise, I probably wouldn't have taken driver. But because I haven't known any better, seems like everything worked out for me.
Right.
Could be the case with a freshman quarterback because you haven't yet had those struggles or those sort of frustrations and the adversity. You just hope that when he hits it for the first time, he's able to handle it well.
And you would think something like that could happen and very well might happen against Arkansas this weekend. I mean, Arkansas is better than people think they are, I think. I don't think their defense is anything spectacular. But the type of athlete, the brand of athlete that Hank Brown is going to be playing against this weekend, and I think this is important too, that offensive line is still trying to figure it out. We're still trying to figure out who the starting five is because of injuries and rotations. I mean, that plays a huge factor into all of this as well.
It does. And just going back to what you were talking about on the defense, Arkansas's front four, or even their front seven, are the strength of their defense. And so Hank Brown will be tested. He's going to have to be able to make plays. He's going to have to be trusted to make plays and get the ball out to his receivers. Talk about one of the best running backs in the country, Ollie Gordon, had 17 carries, 49 yards, and a touchdown against that Arkansas defense in a 39-31 game where Oklahoma State ended up winning. But it took a 27-for-48 performance, throwing for 326, Alan Bowman, that Oklahoma State quarterback, to go and beat that defense. And so when you sit there and talk about it, it does. It brings a little bit of question marks where you're facing one team's strength, And well, on the other side of the ball, your team has a little bit of a question marks, and it hasn't necessarily lived up to the hype that I think that it had in the preseason, and I think injuries play a big part of that as well. But then you're throwing a freshman quarterback in there. Arkansas is going to stack the box and make Hank Brown throw the ball around the field.
And that's an Arkansas defense, too, against Oklahoma State that got put in a couple really bad spots because of bad coaching, turnovers, things like that, which happens in all games. But that's an Arkansas defense that – it's not going to be the same one that Auburn torched last year at Fayetteville, I think is the best way to say that. And not that we want Hank Brown to have the adversity or turn it over or do whatever, but it's going to happen at some point. The big question is, how does he respond? And I think Bradley brings up a good point, too, because his entire phone call was based off of conversations we were having before the season started, whether it be you and me and T-Bone, whoever it is, talking about what does Auburn need from the quarterback spot. We even admitted, like, no matter who the quarterback is, what did Auburn need to reach their goals of the season, which at that point were 8-4, possibly 9-3. Could the sky could have been the limit, really, I guess, theoretically. And so I think there's two conversations that need to be revisited as we enter week four. What does Auburn need? Well, I guess we need to start with the big one first. What are Auburn's goals at this point? Have those goals changed for Auburn going into week four as SEC play begins? Have the goals changed for Auburn and the outlook and the outcomes of this season? And then the secondary question to that, what does Auburn need from the quarterback spot if it does end up being Hank Brown the rest of the way? What do they need to get to that point? And that's an open question.
I was going to say, you threw that on me right before break. Oh, man.
yeah, right. Man, no, I was about a minute away. 334-321-1390. We'd love to hear from you.
I don't think the goal of a win-loss perspective changes. And I think that's from the mindset of the coaches. I think that's the mindset of the players. It needs to be the mindset of those two. But I think it's still, honestly, it should be the mindset of the fan base as well. And again, we've talked about it. I talked about it after the loss to Cal. Auburn can still be a good team. Will they be great or elite? No, because they can't go and handle business against teams that they should beat. That being said, being a fan base, you almost expect Auburn to drop a game that they shouldn't lose, and you expect Auburn to win a game that they probably shouldn't win.
Jabba.
And so that being said, that's why that conversation of 8-4, 7-5, 8-4, 9-3 are all the realistic topic of conversation.
You're saying Auburn has a win out there they're not supposed to get. You still think, you still believe this team can do that?
Yeah.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just
no,
curious.
And I do. I do still think that's the case, whether that be the Oklahoma game that Auburn is not projected to win, the A&M game that Auburn's not projected to win, either of the road games at Kentucky or Missouri. I think we're projected to beat Kentucky, but not to Missouri. I think you could have a chance in one of those games. And until Auburn doesn't Jabba, Auburn has already done the Jabba in the negative way. They just have to respond with the Jabba in the positive
you're
way.
Looking for the positive Jabba yeah. now. Okay, so you're saying Auburn just got it done and out of the way early
there
this
we go.
Season.
Yeah,
okay. So Auburn should roll in Lexington, boy. They
I think
should
Auburn,
roll.
What I'm basically telling you is Hank Brown's winning the Heisman, and Auburn is going 11-1.
That's
I feel like
I
that's
yeah.
the only realistic yeah. topic of conversation now. And if there's any callers that have any other opinions, I don't want to hear about it.
Yeah,
I'm
Christian
kidding.
Says you're wrong. Christian says you are incorrect, you're dumb, and you should not call into this radio show.
And
no.
my mic's about to be cut off forever.
334-321-1390. I want to dive into this some more because this is going to be really, really fun. What is Auburn's new, or what are the new goals for Auburn football this season? We're 3 weeks in. This team is 2-1 with a loss to California, and SEC play begins. What are the current goals of this team for the end of the season, and what type of quarterback play has to happen for that to happen? We'll talk about that some more here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line after this on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Back inside the studio, we continue on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Appreciate you all being with us on this September 17th, 2024. And got an interesting topic that we kind of were given but dug up and elaborated on, I guess, if you will, here on the show. And would love to get your thoughts on all of this. 334-321-1390. Through three games this season for Auburn football, given the results we've seen, the blowout of Alabama A&M, the loss to California, and the bounce-back game against New Mexico, with SEC play beginning, has Auburn's goals, Auburn football, have the goals changed for this team this year? Have the goals changed in terms of win-loss? Have the goals changed on possible postseason? Have they changed on development and what the team will look like? I think there are multiple ways to answer this, Christian, because I think in terms of what the team looks like, you've already seen that. I mean, you've seen the changes that needed to be made and constantly seeing some with injuries and development and things like that. Hugh Freeze continues to praise the young guys for their performances, guys like Braden Joyner and others who have just really shined in the moment, if you will. But with the win-loss total, realistically, yes, Auburn is still very much alive for 8-4, 9-3 if they really get hot. I mean, would have to catch fire, but I think you can bring those topics back up now.
You have to double positive Jabba.
No, that's too much. No.
Otherwise, that means basketball or something is going
to. Oh, God. Yeah, Auburn loses all their non-conference games in basketball.
Right.
Yeah.
It'll be leveled somehow.
It always does. It always does. But I do think with the win-loss thing, it can still happen.
Yeah.
Because we have to remind ourselves, okay? We have to remind ourselves that 8-4 in year two is a good year.
Very.
It will be disappointing to some. It will be great to others. But what I hope is that the majority of Auburn fans would accept an 8-4. And what we talked about at the beginning of the year, throughout the entire summer and into fall camp and into week one, is still relevant right now. 8-4 is a weird record for a football team because 8-4 has to look the right way. It has to look good doing it. You can have a blowout in there at times if it's to the right team and the right scenario at Georgia, for example. But 8-4 cannot be a loss to Cal and a loss to Arkansas, but you just happen to go and beat Missouri on the road. Like, for me personally, I said this the other day and I stand by this, a good win does not trump a bad loss in my book. Some people it does, but a good win does not trump a bad loss. And so many people have talked about since the California loss, okay, now Auburn really has to go beat somebody that they weren't supposed to, because preseason, 8-4 could happen if you simply won all your home games. That could happen.
Yeah.
But that's not the case anymore. So I look at it as, well, now Auburn has to go beat somebody they're not supposed to just to try and make up for the loss to Cal. And I know that's a lot in one group right there, but that's how I feel.
I see where you're going with everything, and I think it's a weird way to look at it because in a conversation like that, you almost want to compare college football to other sports to where – again, even going back to Auburn basketball, where it's like they might not look good in the early season or even the early SEC rankings, but then if you start looking good at the end of the year, even if you lose a game or whatever, it feels a little bit better. In a 12-game season, it's a little bit harder to have that way because it feels like every single game matters because, well, it does. You can't go out and lose a non-conference game like you can in college basketball and still be at the 24-6 mark going into the SEC tournament where you like where you're at. And so, no, I get where you're going with it because, I mean, if, say, Auburn beats Cal and starts 5-0, loses to Georgia, but then it makes it up to 7-2 or whatever, and then all of a sudden you lose two of the next three, it feels a lot worse than what could possibly happen with what you're saying is you lose the Cal, you have the frustration game, but then say you find a way to go out and beat Missouri, you beat Texas A&M, and you finish 8-4 to where you feel like things are still progressing up. It's weird how a record like that can feel so many different ways, especially because the way that our minds work, whether it's that's Auburn fans or just college football fans in general, if you have a year like that to where you do get hot, then all of a sudden you're looking at it, you're going, gosh, we went 8-4. We beat Cal in week two. We're 9-3. Imagine where we're at that point. And that's such a tough reality to try and have to hold yourself away from. Mentality.
Which, I mean, the what if is always going to be there.
Right.
It's my favorite game, but the fans are always going to have the what if we beat Cal? What if they didn't lose? You know what I'm saying? Or whatever the case may be. But you bring up an interesting comparison of college football versus college basketball because so many teams make the postseason, right? And that is, it's getting there.
I was going to say, they're trying to.
In college football. So, yes, for so long, if you start out hot and then you fizzle out or just, you know, burn a flat, or get a flat in the November month and you blow a tire, that's the word I was looking for, the term I was looking for, and you just, you die in November, it's like, man, what could have been, right? What could have been? Whereas in college basketball, if you're hot November, December, January, and then February, March, you kind of just limp to the finish line, you still have a postseason opportunity to turn it around. Whereas in college football, that hasn't been the case. Now, it's still very limited in college football, of course, with the 12-team playoff, and you've got automatic bids and things like that, but for a team like Auburn, or I even throw in Ole Miss in this scenario, a team that typically always starts out hot and then gets humbled down the stretch, for Ole Miss fans, I think they have a chance to feel that way like some basketball teams do, where Ole Miss is going to win their first 8 games, but then they're going to lose their last 2 or last 4 or 5, but they could still back their way into the playoff based off of potential and what they did early in the season. That is very much a possibility.
All of this kind of wraps up. When you were saying this, I thought of it. The Auburn 2017 football year.
That's a great example.
Where you
That's
go
a
out,
great Auburn
you beat
example.
Georgia Southern 41-7. You lose at Clemson 14-6 in a game that Clemson didn't win. You lost, essentially.
Because of Gus Malzahn.
Right. You then go and beat Mercer 24-10 in a game where you're going into SEC play going, did that game make us feel worse? Or did it, like, do we feel better or do we feel a whole lot worse? You then go to Columbia, which is who I referenced with Jarrett Stidham a segment or two ago. You beat them 51-14. You win at Mississippi State. You beat Ole Miss. You lose a game in Baton Rouge 27-23. You're then sitting at 5-2. And you win your five final remainder games. And again, that's talking about you have that ugly loss where you don't feel good about it, but you're rising in the later months. And then all of a sudden, you beat number one. You beat number one. And then you lose to Georgia 28-7 in the SEC championship. And then you lose to the national champions in the University of Central Florida. Now the Fighting Gus Malzahns, playing the Fighting Gus Malzahns at that point. But how weird that season feels is kind of where we're at right now, of how everything is still in front of you, but it talks to your example about how if you go out and you lose a game, it feels like you have to make something up. That 10-4 year, by no means does it feel like a failure, but it feels like there was so much more that you left at the table versus just a 10-4 record.
It was a missed opportunity.
It was.
It is a massive. It's the same way with 2013 on a much grander scale, because right. You got all the way there. You got the opportunity. You just couldn't seal the deal. That's a different story. 2017 Auburn fits into this conversation extremely well. And again, I really like my Ole Miss example too, because that's a team that continues to start hot, get blown up in the rankings, and then they play Georgia and they get demolished, or they play Alabama and can't get over the wall, and they get towards the end. They've got a good record. They probably have a good team, but in a four-team playoff era, they were never able to break through.
No.
Now in the 12-team playoff, they will. But in terms of what we're looking at with Auburn right now, yeah, I mean, one loss, and that's what we preached all summer long during this new college football era. We talked about this a ton at SEC Media Days in Dallas back in July, was one loss doesn't end your season. Two losses don't end your season if you do it the right way. That's where the asterisk starts to come in there, Christian, right? Is if you lose a game, you're still in it. Auburn is still in it for whatever they want to do this season. Nothing is off the table right now.
It's the saying of, and it's the best saying in sports, to where you control your own destiny.
You just don't want it to happen this early, I think, is where people are starting to get hung up on, and I get it. I absolutely do. You don't want it to be, okay, now it's do or die.
Right. You got to go in now. You almost, not that you want to have that blanket to fall back on, but you almost getting rid of it in week two makes the topic a little bit more of a stressful conversation. But thankfully, the SEC championship is forever going to matter to where a win and loss record won't mean anything.
God,
right?
Don't get me started. Don't get me started. More college football news when we come back. Tennessee has agreed to do something moving forward with their football tickets, and I have a feeling fans aren't going to be happy about it. We'll talk about that coming up next here on ESPN Radio.
On the line with Jacob Goertz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goertz with you on the Auburn Opelika sports leader. Christian, did you see this story today about Tennessee and Tennessee? It's Tennessee athletics, I guess, but Tennessee football has just, and I'm pulling up the article again to make sure that I have it correct here. Starting in 2025, okay, Tennessee has decided that the football ticket prices will now be raised to help pay players in a revenue-sharing era. This is from Adam Sparks at Knoxville News. I don't think he reported it. It's the article that I pulled up, though. Says the University of Tennessee will increase football ticket prices and the required donations that accompany them by an average of 14.5% in 2025, with most of the new costs going to a talent fee.
A quote, talent fee.
A talent fee, yep, to pay players. Your thoughts?
Well, we don't do enough. with NIL or anything, right? So we're going to make the family of five that can afford maybe one non-conference game a year to spend $600 or $700 on a weekend to go watch a game, much less in a conference game where you want to go watch a full-out stadium at night. We're going to make them pay even more because the casual fan, I'm just glad the casual fan makes six or seven figures. And so, honestly, I have no problems with it because I don't think there should be – I don't think anybody's going to suffer from it. I don't think there's going to be any sort of jump back or anything. I couldn't agree with it more.
Yeah, I'm just so excited that fans who, you know, already travel and tailgate and pay money to do that, yeah. and you know, now they already pay outrageous ticket prices, and Tennessee must be so proud, and there must be so many people trying to get in the door there at Neyland Stadium that they're having to turn people away. So they said, you know what, we'll do it by natural selection. We'll just raise the ticket prices some more, and we'll weed out the people we don't want to attend games. And instead of... in this new era of paying our own players, what a genius idea. We'll have the fans do it.
Instead of taking 10% out of, which I hope everybody realizes that there was very much sarcasm
in
the sentence that was said. Otherwise, sorry, I'm not coming back.
Yeah, but sorry.
Again, very, very sarcastic with everything. Yeah, I'm glad that the fans have to cover the 10% more instead of a little bit going out of the athletic department or something. I'm trying to find an interesting stat, so I'll throw it back to you for a minute because I want to find this out real fast.
Yeah, I mean, it's a 10% talent fee, but it's going to be on average ticket prices will be raised 14.5%. And it says, quote, "We want to be a leader in college sports. That means we want to be a leader in revenue sharing." That's from Danny White, the Tennessee athletic director. And I don't know. I at the forefront, I'm frustrated. At the forefront, I'm like, are we serious? I understand why. And I'm looking at a comment underneath this right now, and the very first one that says, "So what if this, quote, talent you put on the field loses? Do the fans get that back?"
Yeah.
I mean, realistically, yeah, I think so. Got a text here that says Tennessee just can't raise NIL money, thus they have to charge the patrons. Says no Yellowwood money there.
I mean,
could be. Yeah, could be the case. This is obviously that's a good point. That's basically Tennessee saying, "Hey, we don't have enough to compete with the others around the league and around college football
year in and year out. We can do it for 1 year,
right?
But
so we're gonna almost guarantee that we make enough money to stay competitive because our fans and donors won't donate as it is. So why is that the case then? If your fans and donors and people won't donate it on their own, you're just gonna force them to do it by attending. If they want to attend your football game and watch their players play, they're gonna have to pay for it.
$328. Is the absolute cheapest. Well, we'll go with the next one down because that's a big outlier. $360 is the cheapest ticket for Tennessee and Alabama this year on October 19th, 2024.
So add what?
$360
times
0.14. That is $50 without fees for the cheapest ticket in the stadium.
No, $50 on top of that.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So yeah. it makes the cheapest ticket in the stadium or would figuratively with this conversation, $410 before fees for one ticket.
Sorry if you have kids.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, the family of five or six that loves Auburn, I mean, or sorry, I guess the Tennessee fan, I wouldn't say the Auburn fan because this isn't drawn in with Auburn right now, but the Tennessee family of six that loves the Volunteers that wants to go to a conference game.
Not anymore.
$1,300. There you go.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, look, a loyal fan of the show, Andy, has called in about this sort of thing multiple times where everything has just become a big money grab. And if you feel that way, that's fine. But this is an example of, I mean, just look at where we are. Look at where we are in college football, where you have a high level athletic department in Tennessee, one of the most well-known brands in college athletics, who is willingly stepping out to say, "Hey, we are raising your ticket prices to pay our athletes because we don't have the funds to do it. And since you, it's almost like a teacher or a parent that says, okay, you won't do it on your own. Cool. Here's a rule that says you have to do it, yeah. Or the government.
Yeah, every time your child comes into my classroom, they're going to bring me a $5 bill so that way I can teach them that day.
Yeah, and it's like, well, we'll start out the year where there's no rule, but you're expected to do it. But now it's...
You're guaranteed.
Right? Guaranteed. That's exactly right. It's so crazy to think about. I don't know, man.
I know it's really what we've talked about, and I'm also so glad. I'm glad with this, and I'm also glad that dollar signs have nothing to do with college football. Like, it doesn't control anything at all.
It's about the fans.
It's about
the
fans and the true experience and making sure that everything else goes safely.
What will happen first, or what will happen just in general? Will Tennessee cancel this? Or will other schools pick up on this?
It feels like as if they would hope that they're not going to be the only ones, that they're just the ones that put their foot forward. And you wonder if there's been conversations about it, or if this was just a Tennessee thing going along of, hey, we're going to do this. Or if it's been, you know, four or five schools that are, okay, we need this too. We're going to agree with you. And then smaller teams, whether it be whoever, don't necessarily need to throw a name at anybody, but some of the smaller teams that can't compete with Alabama, Georgia, and Tennessee, or I guess not Tennessee, but Alabama, Georgia, Texas, it just totally eliminates any sort of conversation.
Okay, but take like Ohio University, for example. Like, Ohio University can't, they can't raise their ticket prices anymore, A, because they don't have enough people going to the games to pay for NIL, but like, I don't know. I don't know. With Tennessee, you would think they wouldn't. Where my brain goes to is what the text kind of was saying was, you would think Tennessee wouldn't have to do this.
You think they would be one of the very last to jump on a topic like that simply because they understand where they're at. But instead, it's almost like the rich continue to get richer, and how everything else just keeps going up. The dollar signs keep increasing, and it's forcing people to adapt to it.
It's wild, man. It is absolutely wild. Now, I wonder if with like big basketball schools like Duke, for example, do you think Duke will have that problem? Do you think Duke will increase the money, the ticket cost to get into Cameron Indoor because they want to make sure they get Cooper flags of the world?
Right.
Maybe.
Well, that's what it's crazy to think in 3 years from now, there could be conversations of, remember when we didn't have to do that? Remember when we didn't have to pay extra?
You know what's going to happen? People are going to quit going. Because eventually, and this is not a political comment or statement or conversation by any means, but with everything being so expensive right now, and just in the world in general, like, more and more people are going to just flat out say, I'm not doing it.
Or we can't.
Yeah, we can't. Yeah, that's probably what it's more of, is we can't. And so, where my brain goes to in this is like, okay, if you're Tennessee, or if you're, let's take Auburn, for example. Let's bring Auburn back into this. There's no secret that I think Auburn would like to add more to the stadium, right? They're adding more on the other end zone. They're putting the new scoreboard in. Fans would like to see more seats in there. Yes, 87,000 is great, but you do have stadiums that are bigger. There's no doubt about it. But what's the point of expanding and making a bigger stadium if you're just going to make the fans so mad that they're going to quit coming? Do you want empty seats at the stadium? I don't know, because people are going to quit coming. Remember the big wave when HD television came through, when that huge wave came through and we saw a dip in the attendance records because people were like, I'll sit at home and watch it on my 65-inch flat screen rather than go and sweat to death inside of Jordan-Hare Stadium in September? You could see something like that in an era, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but in an era where I would be willing to bet attendance is probably down on average across college football.
Yeah. I mean, it's
crazy, man.
It's
crazy.
It's a topic you wouldn't think would come up, and be, as you mentioned, not with one of the top dogs, not only in the SEC, but in college sports or college athletics. The fact that is the figurehead that's taken that first step forward.
Let me take a sidestep on this. What if Tennessee, now whether they were actually going to do this or not, I don't know. But let's just say for you know, funsies here.
Funsies,
I guess.
Ooh, yeah. We love funsies.
What if Tennessee had come out and said, we're going to add a 10% charge to every ticket to get inside of Neyland Stadium to help pay for scholarships, to help pay for financial aid, to help pay for student housing, athletic housing, help pay for the cafeteria, whatever they call it, for the athletes. Do you think the fans would be more receptive of that if they had said, hey, we're going to take this money and it's going to help us give more football players more scholarships, or just flat out pay for those scholarships for them to go and get a quality education? Do you think fans would have accepted it a little bit more rather than calling it a talent fee?
A talent fee, or a side question to the side question.
Uh-oh.
What if it was simply nothing to do with athletics, but it was to lower the tuition rates or to make it to where the 99% of the students got some sort of benefit rather than the 85 players on the football field?
I think that could be something too. I think, and from a money standpoint, the University of Tennessee rather than just the Tennessee Athletic Department.
That's what I'm referring to. Sure. Yeah, the fact of, yeah, we're going to increase scholarships not just for athletes, but for the common student that fulfills 99.2% of of our campus halls.
That would make too much sense.
What do we know?
What do we know? Just a couple of sports radio guys. What do we know, man? In case you missed it, Tennessee Athletic Department announces they will add a 10% talent fee to every football ticket starting in 2025. It will raise ticket prices by an average of 14.5% with other fees and things like that built in as well. So, yeah, just wait and see who else adapts this and see who else goes in on this and how this is going to affect stadium atmosphere, stadium attendance, merchandising, all that type of stuff. I'm curious to see on how that's going to play out. We'll get to our final break. We'll come back and wrap it up all here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Man, we appreciate you all being with us today for the last 2 hours. We've had a lot of fun on the show today. There was no baseball power hour today. Lindsey Crosby unable to make it in, and so Christian Griffin and I just filled it all with football, which was exciting. We talked a lot of college football today. Week 3 results, Auburn results, news out of Knoxville. I mean, all sorts of things were on the show today, and so if you missed any of it, you can go and catch it with the podcast. You can find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. Christian, before we get out of here, though, I know we mentioned it at the forefront of the show, but Lee Scott Academy, undefeated, huh? They had a test with the Beulah Bobcats last week, and seems like they aced that test, and now they got another one with Randolph County this week.
They do, heading up to Randolph County. Again, a battle of the undefeateds. Lee Scott 4-0, 2-0 in the region. Randolph County 3-0, 1-0 in the region. And I believe that Randolph County is power ranked above Lee Scott. I mean, again,
because those are worth a lot.
I was about to say, because Auburn Enterprise showed how important that was, right?
Yeah, Enterprise was the number 2 team in the state. Auburn was number 4, and, you know, all we did was go and beat them by 30 seconds.
But, yeah.
You know, it's okay. It's all right, man.
But a 24-7 home victory against Beulah, the first time that Lee Scott was home in 3 weeks. So it was really nice to finally get a home game.
And your reward is to go back on the road.
Back on the road, but then following that, there's a bye week, and then 4 of the final games are at home at Judd Scott Field. So
4
it's
of the
nice
final
to,
5, right?
Yes, so it's nice to get at least to get those up and out of the way. Glenwood is sandwiched in between 2 home games, which don't ask any fans about how that came up because we went to Glenwood last year.
Yes, we did.
But a really big test, Randolph County. We're told they're physical. We're told it's going to be a hostile environment. And hopefully the weather is going to hold up for us. I know y'all had fantastic weather the entire time.
While we got
downpoured on. But
yeah, I've never been more thankful to go on the road.
Yeah, for listeners, I sent Jacob a picture and said, look at what we're dealing with right now. And he responded about 3 minutes later with a picture of his own and the sun setting in the background. And it was like, all right, cool. All right, that's fine.
Beautiful Wildcat Stadium, man. Enterprise has a really nice facility down there. And we had a good trip. Auburn took care of Enterprise 53-22, my man. This Auburn High School team, they got some talent. There ain't no doubt about that. We are back home this Friday against the Jaguars. So we got that back home at Duck Sanford. And then we got some tough road trips coming up as Auburn High School. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, we're happy to be at home during those weeks.
Yeah, that works out. Wow.
It is. It works out really nicely. Again, Randolph County this week, the bye week, and then Dadeville and Wadley at home, Glenwood on the road, and then Comer and Realtown to finish up the year. Lee Scott, 4-0, really doing Lee Scott things, handling their business. The mindset has been all year long that we're going to go in blind with a bunch of these teams because we're seeing them for the very first time. And regardless of whatever you hear about them or whatever you get from them, you can't take that. You got to take that with a grain of salt. You can't take too much seriousness on it. So for this year, the mindset has been we're going to handle Lee Scott football. We're going to handle ourselves. We're going to be more physical. We're going to be tougher, and we're going to be more disciplined than the other team on the field. And so far, that's been the case, and it's worked out really well.
I mean, I haven't seen Lee Scott play this year, but I can take a pretty good guess that they're going to run the football a lot.
They have.
I'm sure they've done that.
They definitely have. I think they understand that there's going to be a couple guys that are bigger than they are on both sides of the football, primarily on the defensive line when it comes to the defensive side of the football. So they got a lot of eye candy, some jet sweeps. Roland Pelzer out of the pocket a little bit. Max Hammer as well with some quarterback keepers getting outside the pocket rather than just hand off to the left side, hand off to the right side. Mm-hmm. But it's working really well. The offense flowing, and man, the defense and the special teams have been the units that I've starred all year long. Just, I mean, locked down on the defensive side of the football.
How was the crowd last week with Beulah coming to town? They were expecting quite a few folks to come down from Beulah to Judd Scott Field. Was it good?
They were, yeah. There were a lot of Bobcats, and credit to everybody at Lee Scott that showed up as well, weathered the storm.
Yeah, that's true.
It was, I think it was Beach the Bobcats night at the student section, and so it's, I guess the umbrellas fit the theme to an extent. Usually you bring the umbrellas for the shade, but it looked like the umbrellas were almost the theme because they were scattered throughout the entire stands. But a big time showing by both crowds. A lot of credit to Beulah for showing up, but a lot of credit for Lee Scott sticking through the weather and watching the Warriors as well.
Yeah, Warriors on the road taking on Randolph County. You can catch that broadcast on Friday. We'll talk about it some more on Friday on AU100, AU100FM.com, and the Radio Alabama app. Christian, thanks so much for your time, man. You'll be back in here on Thursday. More on that to come this week. But yeah, we'll be together in here on Friday. So,
sounds good. Always a pleasure.
Appreciate it. All right, we're out of here. Out of time. We got to get out of here because the drive is coming up. Bill Cameron, Dan Peck, the crew is in here for the next 2 hours. So we will be back tomorrow. Double D Wednesdays, Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. You never know what else is going to happen. So back tomorrow, 2-4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.